Welcome to Your Move with Andy Stanley. In this weekly 30-minute podcast, you'll discover how to make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, listen, and connect. Today is the first part in a three-part series entitled, When God. Is God's silence a sign of his absence, or does it mean something else? In this message, Andy recounts the story of one of the greatest men that ever lived, his doubts, and a secret reassurance available to everyone.
One of the things that we all have in common, if you're a Christian, if you're not a Christian, but you believe in God, one of the things we all have in common is we've all had seasons in our life where we ask God for something and God just wouldn't do it. In fact, the three words that I think we've all used at some point in our life to describe God are these three words: inattentive, uncooperative, and late. Inattentive, uncooperative, and late. Now, I'm gonna ask all of us at all of our churches, all of our campuses, even if you're home alone, watching alone, seriously, I want us all to participate, okay? So everybody get ready to participate. Even if you've never been to our church before, I need you to participate. If there has ever been a time in your life where you felt like God was either inattentive, uncooperative, or late, even if you're sitting at home watching by yourself, I want you to raise your hand. If you've ever felt like God, now I want you to keep them up, okay? Keep them up. You're in your living room or you're watching. I want everybody to keep them. Now I want you to look around. And I could just close, you can put your hands down. I could just close in prayer now because you've just learned something. You thought it was just you, didn't you? Because you did. You just thought it was just you. And the reason this is so difficult for us is because when we feel like God is inattentive, uncooperative, late, we feel like we're the only ones, right? And there's a couple of things that make this even worse than normal. One thing is people like me, preachers. Preachers really, really, really make you feel like you're the only one because preachers make it look so easy, don't we? And preachers make it sound so simple. And everybody in church shakes their hand and says amen. And then if God is inattentive, uncooperative, late for you, somebody says, well, you need more faith, or you need to pray harder, or you need to get rid of sin, or you need to do something. In other words, the reason God is inattentive, uncooperative, or late is really it's your fault, and it's working out for everybody else because everybody else, God's answering their prayer. But if this describes your deal with God, there's something wrong with you. So I wanted us to all raise our hand and say, at some point in all of our lives, we feel like God isn't paying attention, God won't cooperate, or perhaps God is late. Now, the other thing that makes this difficult for us are the people around us. Because there are people around us and life just works out for them, doesn't it? I mean, they have a job. They have health insurance. Their kids got into whatever school they wanted to go to. In fact, their kids, behave. And you look at these people for whom life just goes well for them. And you think, you know what? They're not even good people. I'm a better people than they are. They're not even church people. They don't even go to church. They play golf and go to the lake and look how smooth and wrinkle-free their life is. And here I am trying to do the right thing and do it the right way and life isn't going that well for me. And so it's just infuriating and it just accentuates the fact that God is inattentive or he's uncooperative or he's late. And then you have some Christian friends and they make it even worse because they say stupid things like this. They say, the other day I was at the mall and I was in a hurry, and I just said, Lord, 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 you know how I'm in a hurry, Lord, I need a good parking spot, and I'm driving down the front, and this lady pulled out, it was the closest parking spot, and I got right in there, and God answered my prayer. And you're like, shut up, okay? I'm asking God for a job, I'm asking God to heal my marriage, I'm asking God to bring my son or my daughter back, I'm asking God about a medical thing, and God answered your prayer about a parking spot? Are you kidding? You don't even want to hear it. You don't even want to go back to church. You don't want to be in a small group with those kind of people who God answers their little petty prayers, and you've got some like major thing going on, and you've been asking and asking and asking and begging and begging and begging, and there is absolutely no progress. But you don't want to give up and abandon God. You don't want to abandon faith because it's difficult to live life without faith. It's difficult to live life without any hope. So the question is, what do you do when it seems like God is inattentive, uncooperative, and late? Because after a while, our faith gets eroded and we begin to devolve into this idea or we begin to think that if God is silent, then God must be absent. That if God isn't answering my prayer, then there may not be a God. If God isn't, engaging in my circumstances, God isn't doing what I need God to do, then maybe even if there is a God, he's not a God who's going to ever be active in my life. If God is going to be so silent, maybe God is absent. And there goes our faith. And there goes our confidence. And there goes our hope. So here's what we're going to do for the next 3 weeks, beginning today. I'm going to tell you three stories from the New Testament about three men whom God loved, God knew their name, and yet at the same time, they all felt like in this stage of their life that we're going to talk about that God was inattentive, uncooperative, and late. And here's what I hope we all take away from these 3 weeks together. I hope we all walk away and realize we can go through the wilderness, we can go through dry times, we can go through times where we feel distant from God, we can go through times and seasons and stages and chapters of life where God is uncooperative, inattentive, and late, and still maintain our faith because God isn't inattentive, he's not being uncooperative, and God is never late. And the first story actually begins, before the first story actually begins, with a man named Herod the Great, King Herod the Great. King Herod was King Herod the Great not because he was a great guy, he was actually not a great guy, because he was a great builder. King Herod was the king of Israel, but he wasn't Jewish. King Herod was the king of Israel because the Romans need somebody to run Israel, and the Romans said, King Herod, you're it. Now, he was an awful guy. He had a bunch of wives. He murdered two of his wives. He murdered three of his sons. He murdered one of his mothers-in-law. I mean, you may not like your mothers-in-law. Imagine, he had like six mother-in-laws, okay? So he just killed one of them. This was the same King Herod that went into Bethlehem when he heard there a king might be born that would, you know, conflict with his goals and ambition. He's the one that sent the soldiers into Bethlehem to murder the babies in Bethlehem. That was perfectly in keeping with his character. Caesar Augustus, who was the emperor of Rome when King Herod was the king of Israel, said about this guy, "It is better to be one of King Herod's swine than one of his sons." That's how evil this guy was. Now, once he died, Rome came in and decided, let's split up this kingdom because Herod had too much power. And so he split it up among two of his sons. And these two sons, along with another son, become a part of this story. So here's how it worked. The kingdom was split between Herod Archelaus, who got Samaria and Judea in the south. That didn't last long. Rome came in, kicked him out, and got somebody else. Galilee, where Jesus spent most of his time, was given to Herod Antipas. Now, in addition to these two sons, there was a third son that had Herod's favor, but he got nothing. His name was Herod Philip. And though he had authority and though he had extraordinary wealth because of his relationship to King Herod, he didn't actually get anything to rule. The other character in our story was a niece. Her name was Herodias. Herodias actually fell in love with Herod Philip, and they were married, and they had a daughter named Salome. You following all this? Okay, you got this, you got to kind of get this picture in your mind. Well, things get kind of crazy because Herod Philip one day went to visit, Herod Antipas one day went to visit Herod Philip, and while he was there, he was alone with Herodias, and he said to Herodias, "Herodias, I don't know how to tell you this, but I've fallen in love with you. I've fallen in love with my brother's wife." And Herodias said to Herod Antipas, "Well, honey, I love you too." And they ran off to Galilee together and they got married. She divorced her husband, which was a big, big, big scandal. She married her husband's brother, moved to Galilee, and she went from simply being the wife of a man whose father was king. Now she's actually the queen. She's the queen of Galilee. She's married to the king who was, you know, the king and the authority in Galilee. So they move in together, their husband and wife, they live in Galilee, everything's great. They live in this beautiful city that he built, that his father started, and life is great. Until the entrance of the new character in the story, whose name was John the Baptist. Now, John the Baptist had a very famous cousin. How many of you, who was John the Baptist's famous cousin? Anybody know? Jesus, that's right. Jesus and John the Baptist were cousins. This is important to the story. John the Baptist was a hero among the common people. They loved John the Baptist. And part of the reason they loved him, he was afraid of nobody. And he would just say what was on his mind. And he began baptizing people in the Jordan River as a sign of repentance. Well, the problem was when Herodias moved into the palace with the new King Herod and became his wife, this was against Jewish law. And even though none of the Herods were Jewish, it was offensive to the Jewish people, and John the Baptist did not miss that. And he began to preach out loud in the public square against the sin of Herodias specifically and Herod, the fact that she had married her brother's, she had married her husband's brother and moved into the palace. This was against Jewish law, and this was offensive to the Jews, and so he began to call her out. Well, Herodias hates John the Baptist, and she wants him put to death. And so she goes to her husband, and she says, we got to get this guy off the street. And her husband, Herod, King Herod, says, you're right, because we know from other extra-biblical sources, he was afraid that there would be an insurrection against him as king among the Jewish people because of this sin of moving in or marrying his brother's wife, even though he was still alive. So that's kind of the setup for the story. And that's pretty exciting, isn't it? What's going to happen? You know, so now what I want to do is I want to take you to Mark chapter 6, and I want to read sort of the synopsis of the story, and then we'll kind of get into the conflict. Here we go. So let me kind of read you now what I've just taught you as it comes from Scripture, because it's a little bit confusing, because part of it's in Matthew, part of it's in Mark. For Herod himself, I'm jumping in right in the middle of a sentence, Mark 6, verse 17. For Herod himself had given orders to have John the Baptist, arrested, and he had him bound, and he put him in prison. And he did this because of Herodias, that's his wife, his brother's ex-wife, because of Herodias, his brother Philip's wife, whom he had married. For John the Baptist, had been saying to Herod, it is not lawful for you to have your brother's wife. Now, which law was he referring to? He's referring to the Old Testament law, to the law of Moses, not the Roman law, not the Greek law, but he was holding them accountable to the Jewish law. So Herodias nursed a grudge against John and wanted to kill him. Herodias didn't just want John in prison. Herodias wanted John dead. And part of it, I'm sure, was her conscience, because it was just a little strange that she would leave, you know, her husband for her husband's brother. Even that was strange, even in that day and age. So, story continues. But she was not able to have him executed, because Herod, her husband, feared John the Baptist and protected him, knowing him to be a righteous and holy man. So, when Herod heard John, he was greatly puzzled, and yet he liked to listen to him. Now, so here's the situation, all right? John the Baptist is in prison. Now, this is kind of tough. See, John the Baptist had been sent to announce Jesus, and he had done that. John the Baptist was the guy. He's baptizing one day. Jesus walks up, and he says, time out. Right there he is. You know the one I've been telling you about? There he is, the Lamb of God that comes to take away the sin of the world. John actually announced the arrival of Jesus. John said to his followers one day, look, I appreciate you following me, but you need to quit following me. You need to follow that guy. That's the guy. He sent his disciples to follow Jesus. He got the people ready to recognize Jesus. He'd done everything as perfect as he knew how to do it. And now he's in prison for doing the right thing. So if ever there was a time for a miracle, this would be a good one. And yet he rotted away in prison day after day after day. Now, John had some friends who would visit him in prison. They'd give him information. And John knew that Jesus was out healing, doing miracles, healing lepers, healing people who were filled with demons, touching people didn't normally touch, talking to women in public. Nobody ever did that. He healed Roman servants. I mean, Jesus was doing all kinds of things for strangers. And yet Jesus wasn't doing anything for his own cousin. And John wasn't feeling the love. And John began to have second thoughts about Jesus. And so one day when his friends are visiting him, he says, guys, this is a little bit embarrassing, but I need to send a message to Jesus. And they're like, all right, what's the message? And here's what he asked him. I'll show you what he said. When John heard in prison what the Messiah, Jesus, was doing, he sent his disciples to ask him. Now listen to this question. I'm telling you, I bet his followers kind of did a double take when John said this. Here's the question he sent to Jesus. Are you the one who was to come, or should we expect someone else? They're like, do you really want us to ask him that? John, you're the one who told us he's the one. I know, but I'm having second thoughts. John, you've heard the stories of what he's doing out there, right? Yeah, but I just need some assurance. I just need something. I just need a word. I just need to know. Now, here's why this is so important for us. Isn't it interesting that when our circumstances take a sudden change, it can be a change for the better or for the worse, how it impacts our confidence in God? Isn't that weird? It's like somehow God becomes different because our circumstances are different, and we know that doesn't make any sense, but it's real, isn't it? It's real. And you're like John the Baptist. It's like, I'm embarrassed to even say this. I'm embarrassed to confess this, but I need a little help. I need a little word. I need a little shout out. I need to know that everything I grew up believing isn't a lie, because it's not working for me. Because you know what? You know this. There is an amount of physical pain that makes it unable for, it makes you unable to care about anybody else. There's a point where you can be in such incredible physical pain that you are unable to care about anybody but yourself. It's the nature of pain. It shrinks us to the size of us. And so consequently, there's John the Baptist. He's with all that he's seen, with all that he's heard, with all that he knows. And suddenly his world is no bigger than his prison cell. And he begins to doubt. And that's what makes Jesus' response so incredibly amazing and so incredibly relevant to all of us. So let me tell you what Jesus doesn't say. So they get to Jesus and they're like, excuse me, Jesus, I need to interrupt your miracle. Your cousin, you know, he's in prison. You did know that. He has a question, and his question is, and it's kind of embarrassing, but he told us we had to ask, Jesus, are you the one, or are we looking for somebody else? Now, I know it's embarrassing. I mean, look at all these people, but from where he sits and from what he hears, he's starting to wonder. And here's what Jesus doesn't say. Jesus doesn't say, yeah, of course I'm the one. Go back, tell him I'm the one. Say that. Neither does he say, yeah, I'm the one, and I'm breaking him out. I'm going to sneak in there tonight. Bingo, we're out. We're going to ride all over the inside of the wall. Ha, ha, ha. Well, you try to find, you know, we're, no, he didn't say that either, okay? Here's what he says. Here's the message he sends back to John the Baptist. You ready for this? This is for you. This is for me. When God seems inattentive to our situation, he says this. Jesus replied, go back and report to John what you hear and see. Because John can't hear past the prison, and he can't see past the prison. So you've got to go back and you've got to tell him what you hear and what you see. You need to go back and report the activity of God outside of his prison cell, because John is a prisoner to what he can hear and to what he can see. So you go back and you tell him what you've heard and what you've seen. John's pain has shrunk him down to the size of a prison cell. He's no larger than his pain. So of course he's beginning to doubt. You go tell him what you've heard and what you've seen. And then Jesus lists the things he wants him to hear and that he wants him to report. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, those who have leprosy are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised, and the good news is proclaimed to the poor. So they're writing all this down, you know, and he says, that's what I want you to say. And they're like, that's it, that's it. You just go tell him. You just go tell him what you've heard and what you've seen. And so they're turning to leave. Jesus is about to turn back to whatever he's doing. And he says, wait, there's one more thing I want you to tell him. And they pause and they look back. And Jesus says, make sure you tell him this. Don't forget, this is the most important part. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. What? Yeah, don't, this is important. Tell him, blessed is anyone who does not stumble or stumble away or fall down or fall out because of me. Okay, Jesus, say, so what you're saying is you might actually do things, you might actually cause things, you might actually allow things that would cause us to stumble away from you? Yeah. So I want you to make sure you tell John, blessed is anyone who does not stumble away from me because of something I've done or haven't done. Okay, so you know he's in prison and he's losing his faith and he's deteriorating and things. You know about that. Yeah. And I realize the reason that's happening is because of me, because I've left him in there. Okay, so you don't like him. So like when you guys were cousins growing up, he did something to you and this is like revenge. I mean, why in the world would you allow him to lose faith in you because of something you've done? That doesn't make any sense. So is it that you don't like John the Baptist? And listen to what Jesus says about him. No, that's not it. Truly I say to you, among those born of women, that'd be about everybody, right? Among those born of women, there has not risen anyone greater than John the Baptist. I think he's the greatest guy who's ever lived so far. But you're gonna leave him in prison? Yeah, and tell him, hang in there. Don't lose your faith just because I've chosen not to bail you out of prison. Now, let me tell you why this is great news for you and this is great news for me. It means this, that your personal circumstances do not necessarily coincide with how God feels about you. And you can't ever lose sight of that. Because like John the Baptist, when we're in a dry season, when we're in the desert, when we're in the wilderness, when God hasn't done anything for us lately and things seem to be getting worse, we begin to draw the conclusion, well, my circumstances reflect the way that God feels about me. And God says, no, they don't. No, they don't. Your personal circumstances don't necessarily coincide with how God feels about you. Don't ever draw that conclusion. Proof of how God feels about you is what happened at the cross, not what's happening at home, not what's happening at school, not what's not happening at work, not what's not happening in the neighborhood, not what's happening in your love life or what's not happening in your love life or with your kids. So what do? When God is inattentive, when God seems to be unavailable, when God seems to be late. I think if we were to ask Jesus what to do, I think he would give us the same advice that he gave John in prison. Here's my updated version of his advice. You look back and remember, and you look outside your circumstances and you reflect. You look back and remember, and you look outside your prison walls and reflect on the activity of God. You look back and you remember those times when God did come through for you. Because what's happening now doesn't discount the reality of past answered prayer, of that difficult patch you had in your marriage and God came through, when you prayed for a child and God came through, when you had a difficult time as a teenager and God revealed himself for the first time to you and it just radically transformed your life. All those past occurrences, all that past interaction with God, it was real, it was true, and you look outside your current prison and you remember, and you take courage from the fact that God was real then, he's real now, he's just not expressing his reality the way that you want him to now. You know, the story doesn't end well for John. You know how this ends, right? Herod has a birthday, and Herodias sends her daughter from a different marriage in to dance for King Herod and his friends, and apparently it was some kind of dance because at the end, you know, the guy, they'd been drinking, you know, so they're all half drunk, and here's this teenage girl that's danced in front of them, and King Herod is just all over himself about Salome, and he says, look, that was so awesome. I'm going to give you anything you ask for, You can have it up to half my kingdom, thinking she's going to ask for a new phone or maybe front row tickets to a Taylor Swift concert. I mean, she's a teenage girl. What's she going to ask for, right? And she says something that teenage girls never say. Hold on a second. I'm going to ask my mom. And she disappears and she finds Herodias and says, the king has said I can have anything up to half the kingdom. What should I ask for? And Herodias says, you tell him you want John the Baptist's head on a silver platter tonight. And because of the drunken, you know, party of a king who was pretty much out of control when he made the promise, because of his pride in front of his friends that he didn't want to violate the promise, he calls for his soldiers and they go down into the prison that night and they behead the cousin of Jesus. And it's not too long after that some very insecure religious leaders pay to have Jesus betrayed and arrested and tried and mocked and lied about, and crucified, and God does nothing to stop it. But God didn't move one centimeter off the center of his throne, because even though it would seem he was inactive, uninvolved, far away, not paying attention, late, God was right where God wanted to be. And the events unfolded just the way God wanted them to unfold. And no, it wasn't a script that John the Baptist would have written for himself. And at the end of Jesus' life, he actually asked the Father, is there any other way through this other than being crucified, other than being put to death for the sins of mankind? And his heavenly Father said, no, this is my plan Friends, 2,000 years later, we're still talking about it. 2,000 years later, we're still celebrating it. 2,000 years later, people's lives continue to be transformed by what seemed to be the inactivity, the inattentiveness of the very God these two men followed and worshiped. Wow. When God is silent, he's not absent. When God seems inactive, it doesn't mean he's inactive. When God seems to be late, it doesn't mean God's late. It just means in the midst of those difficult circumstances, we've got to look back and reflect, and we've got to look outside of our prison walls and reflect on what God is doing all around us. And then here's the best part, okay, you ready? If you haven't been paying attention, come on back in, all right? Quit doing email, whatever. You need your undivided attention. This is the best part, okay? Now, this is going to be a little weird, okay? And you may think I'm crazy. I think in that interaction between Jesus and John's friends that were going to take a message back to him in prison, I think Jesus sent you a secret message. I think he sent you a secret message. I think he sent a secret message to every single follower of Jesus that would live in the first century, the second century, the third century, all the way through the 20th century and the 21st century. And here's the secret message that I'm going to uncode for you. This is the thing that we hang everything on. You ready? You ready? Here's the secret message. Blessed is, say it with me. Anyone. Guess who you are? You're anyone. In other words, in that first century context, he reaches way beyond the first century, way beyond John the Baptist, and he speaks directly to you and directly to me. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble away, fall away, lose faith, give up hope. Blessed is anyone who does not stumble on account of me. Blessed means blessed by God. God's paying attention. He knows your name. He knows your circumstances. And there is a promise at the end of your faithfulness. If you will remain faithful in spite of what Jesus hasn't done for you lately, in spite of what God hasn't done for you lately, in spite of the fact that nothing is changing for you. It's as if God looked through the portals of time and he said, I see your frustration. I see your hopelessness. I see that you're just on the verge of walking away. I see that you're on the verge of giving up. Don't give up. Don't give up on me. Blessed are you. When you remain faithful, you refuse to walk away. You refuse to stumble away on account of me.
Thanks so much for listening to Your Move with Andy Stanley. We hope today's podcast will help you make better decisions and live with fewer regrets. So check out our website at yourmove.is for additional ways to watch, listen, and connect. Now it's your move. Do something with what you've heard.